Ciao a tutti, welcome to Angels of Creation podcast. I'm your host, Cristian Mastronato. In the podcast, I bring together my knowledge in complex systems with my experience in leading technology innovation and new product development to explore how successful products, organizations, and ideas emerge. In these episodes, we're going to meet a wonderful guest, Luca Minudel, an expert agile practitioner who works at the forefront of novel methodologies to improve the way we work and create value. Luca worked in very interesting companies, as we'll soon find out, but more importantly, he's also a practitioner of complexity thinking. And he wrote a very helpful book titled Living Complexity about how to manage and exploit human complexity. Talking about the definition of complexity and human complexity, Luca shared practical examples of complex problems like COVID-19, conflicts between stakeholders, limited information and understanding, and constantly changing issues, emphasizing the importance of adapting approaches based on the degree of complexity. We also talked about his book, Living Complexity, and how in the process of writing it, Luca discovered three regions of practices about self-organizations, assessing and adapting to complexity, and organizational practices, providing practical tools for dealing with complexity across these three regions. In particular, we discussed how frameworks like Enabling can be useful starting points for assessing complexity, also going through an example to help categorize project complexity levels. On the relationship between agile and complexity, Luca sees agile methods as tools to help absorb uncertainty and move problems from complex to complicated order spaces. But he views complexity science as broader than just agile software methods. The conversation then shifts to Luca's process of writing his book, Living Complexity, discussing how the book went through several versions and iterations, guided by feedback and further research. We highlighted the significance of being a practitioner and implementing ideas in real-world scenarios. He believes that practical applications is essential for truly understanding and harnessing the power of complexity. As the discussion continued, Luca delves into the characteristic of a leader in the face of complexity. He stresses the importance of awareness, both of oneself and the system in which one operates. Collaboration and involving those affected by decisions are also crucial, and complex problems require diverse perspectives and collective intelligence. Resilience is another key trait, as complex issues often evolve and demand ongoing attention. Finally, transparency is vital to foster trust and create an environment where complexity can be navigated effectively. Overall, Luca's insights provide a thoughtful list of qualities to reflect on. Giving us a fresh perspective on complexity and its role in our lives. It challenges the notion that complexity is always negative and encourages embracing it as a source of joy and growth. By understanding and applying complexity in practical ways, we can navigate complex problems more effectively and lead with greater awareness and resilience. As a side note, I experimented using LLMs to prepare the introduction, starting from blatant mistakes, even wondering, did I upload the right transcript? It seems to me it helped to craft a more comprehensive summary of what we're going to discuss. Curious to hear your feedback on this. Now we're ready to start, so let's go! Welcome, Luca. Great to have you in the Angels of Creation podcast. Thanks a lot for joining us, and I'm really excited to talk to you today. It's our very first chance today to actually dive down into complexity, because you actually wrote about complexity and you're a practitioner of, we can say, of complexity science. And so I'm actually very curious of how this conversation is going to pan out. I would ask you, as I ask all my guests, to start from an introduction of yourself and to tell us a bit more about yourself, about your story, and how you ended up here talking about complexity.
Hi, Christian. Pleasure to be here. So, about myself, my name is Luca Minudel. I'm Italian, and I'm sure my accent is already giving that away. My background is in computer science and software development. So, this is where I start. And about me, well, I actually started in software development in a very interesting time. Software development as an economical activity was quite new, and it was very exciting. Most of the world were analog at the time, and most of the people didn't understand the potential of software. So they were kind of surprised of the cost of developing customized software. And that was constantly pushing us into try to find a way to make it faster and cheaper to write software. And then I've been part of the initial wave of Agile with the many of the pioneers. And that was the time of rogue teams where no one knew about Agile, and we have to demonstrate by our ability to release that Agile was working. So this is where I come from, and a very exciting time that got all the learning and helped me become the professional that I'm today, a mentor, advisor and consultant in Lean, Agile and complexity.
It sounds very exciting. You definitely have this experience across the kind of all the software life cycle, but also you saw how the software industry evolved. And I know you don't like to brag too much about your experiences, but actually I know that part of your experience on building software systems were in a Formula One team in Ferrari, so which definitely must be a place where you are challenge really to the limits of what you can do. And I also know that as a consultant, you worked quite a few years in ThoughtWorks, which is one of the sort of reference consultancies when it comes to Agile. So yeah, I just wanted to sort of let the listener know that your expertise is quite deep. Interestingly enough, we met a few years ago, you know, Agile conference was called Aginex. I don't think it exists anymore, which is a pity because it was a very interesting conference happening in London. And one of the things I registered immediately was your interest in complexity, which when I was looking, it was the period I was also starting looking into this topic, probably talking about 2018, don't remember those years. And now we can start to hear more about that. But yeah, definitely 4 or 5 years ago was like a very, very remote, almost unknown topic, unless you are into some very specialized fields. And that's really piqued my interest in, and that was at the time main reason to interact with you, besides, of course, the huge experience you just shared with us. And well, in the meantime, also, you managed to write and publish a book about complexity. And that's something that even more I found very interesting, because to be fair, over the years, a lot of books have come out. But what really I find interesting about your book is the fact that it's very much grounded in the practice. You consider yourself a practitioner. I remember I've read something, you've writing something about considering yourself a practitioner recently. And I think that's what I think it's really interesting on having this practical approach of complexity that goes beyond sort of the theoretical framework, which is, to be honest, as the listener knows, one of the main, I would say, statements of this podcast, really finding practical application of complexity. And in that sense, your book kind of sits really at the center of that. So I would really love to start then talk about your book first, and then probably we can explore other areas. You wrote a book that is titled Living Complexity. And so what I would really like to understand from your practitioner perspective is, what is for you a practical definition of complexity, a little bit more in general? And then I also know you want to focus more on human complexity. And so I'd be interested to know what's different in human complexity.
I'm sure there are many theories that can provide great definitions. So instead, I will provide you with some examples. When I think about complex problems, the one that come to my mind, these are some of the elements. So sometimes it's a problem that is completely new to me, to my team, or to everyone else in the world. Think about COVID when it first was discovered and start to have an impact in our life. And then when I deal with a complex problem, sometimes I find myself in a situation where different people, like my team members, the customers, the stakeholder, have different ideas and conflicting priorities, like it often happen in politics. That's another element that I meet often in complex problems. Talking about information and understanding of the problem, Another element is that we often have limited and fragmented information about it. It doesn't matter how much time we spend to analyze it, to search for it. We will always have limited and fragmented information and understanding. And the interesting paradox is that at the same time, we have a lot of information coming to us about that problem, and we don't have enough time to process the information. So that's an interesting paradox. In the same as when we search and surf the internet for something, we have too much information. And then when I try to understand the complex problem, my initial understanding, as well as that of my team, is partial. And again, it doesn't matter how much time we spend to try to understand the problem up front. The understanding improves only after we start working on the problem gradually. The more we start to draft and try to produce solutions, the more our understanding of the problem improves, to the point that we get a grip of understanding the problem only after we have produced a good enough solution. And even after that, the problem can keep changing and evolving and requiring constant attention. It's never fully solved. Think about climate change or migration. And so those are some of the elements that come to my mind when I think about complex problems.
I see. I like your approach of not necessarily looking for a definition, but more about framing the problem through examples, because it helps to ground it and it helps to show how complexity is in our daily lives. I was recently doing an opening session for some of the masters at the Barcelona Technology School, and I was really trying on one end to help them giving some theoretical frameworks about, okay, this is complexity when you hear this word, that's what it is. But on the other end, these examples are very relevant to show, listen, this is in your daily life. It's not just something in, I don't know, physics or particle physics or meteorology, just to say it's something that you can meet every day. Diving down a little bit in your book, Leading Complexity, one of the things that I found interesting is the way you also explored different definitions. Is not necessarily structured in a way that I would expect, let's say, a standard book, let me call it. And so one of the things that really I found interesting is that you kind of broke it up into some main sections, you might call them, but you called them regions. And I would be curious to understand what are these regions and why you wanted to go down this structuring of the book.
Well, actually, that came up writing the book. It's a learning that emerged while I was writing the book. My first intent was to create a catalog of practical application inspired by complexity thinking. Because it was so hard for me to find practical applications that the one that I collected and find out through the years, I thought, I want to write them down for everyone to see. And when I had this list of practical applications, I start to notice that they could be grouped in three regions or groups of practice. The first one is about self-organization. Complex systems are self-organizing in the sense that things emerge through the local interaction of all the people involved and the technical component involved in our case in that system. And so the first group of practices, they were really about us as a human being and the fact that we are complex and how we can deal with the self-organization without hindering it. The second group actually was practices related to try to assess and adapt to the complexity that we face. When we are at work, we deal with a lot of different problems. They are not all complex and they are not all equally complex. So it's important to understand what kind of problem is in front of us and then to adapt accordingly. So first I find this region and then I further refine it and divide it in all the practices that are about assessing the degree of complexity and then adapting to it. And then the remaining group was about practices related more generally to the broader organization. I call them regions because I want to think about the map a territory. And in the territory that I was exploring, I identified these three regions. So we are complex, that's the first group. The second group is about the work that we do may be complex. And the third is about the whole organization is complex.
I love the fact that maps constantly pop up in many interviews. And I'm thinking I had a very interesting conversation some time ago about worldly maps with Kevin Marks. But even in the last interview before this one with John Wilshire, we're discussing about the importance of maps, but even more importantly in the exercise of mapping. More than the static map is really the exercise. When you try to build the map, you learn a lot of things into the process. And it sounds something like that also in your own experience of building and writing this book, that you actually learned a lot of things and way of different ways of looking at things. So what were for you the main takeaways of the books? Is there any specific practice or any specific kind of lesson learned that you kind of came out when you built? I'm using the word built on purpose versus wrote because it's more than just writing. I feel in the interaction with you, the creation of this book. And so what were the main takeaways or the main practices, the things really kind of from your perspective and insight stand out of living complexity?
Well, let me share with you two elements that I come to realize more clearly writing the book. And the first one is about how to deal with the self-organization without hindering it. We talk about the self-organizing system, which teams and can be part of. And we think about how can we intervene in a self-organizing system. Now I can mention the weather system. You know, it can produce a beautiful sunny morning and also a natural disaster. So it's not that just having a self-organizing team will make things go well. So how can we nudge the team in order for it to produce desirable and useful results without hindering the self-organization? That's the question. And an advice that became more clear to me is that I cannot pretend to be external from the system, to be in a special advantage, privilege advantage, a point where I can see the old system and understand it completely. And I cannot intervene into the system alone and with the certainty of producing the desired outcome. First, I need to be aware that I will never completely know and understand the system. Second, that even as a leader, I cannot act alone, but I need to involve those affected by the action that we want to do. Third, every action is a trial and error. And see what comes, what works, and what not. And then experience in that field means the ability to recognize any pattern that you can see. And when you see some pattern that you know is detrimental, ask yourself, what can you do to try to break down that pattern? So the first learning for me is to clarify this lesson on how to deal with the self-organizing system in a way that makes sense for complexity. The second level, I was mentioned the second region, it made me become more aware that as much as I like complexity, there are people that feel more comfortable in non-complex system or problems. And both of us tend to see every problem the way that is more comfortable for us. So I personally tend to see problems more complex than they really are. People that inhabited the complicated and ordered space, they tend to see problems like that. So I learned the importance to always assess the nature of the problem collectively with people that is working on that problem, and then to explicitly decide how to adapt my approach to the real degree of complexity of the problem. And I became more aware of that through writing this book.
Thank you. You said quite a lot of interesting things into this, into your lesson learned, you can say, out of the book. And I find them very interesting because, yes, each of them represents specifically the journey you have when you really have to sort of deal with any sort of complex situation. But in particular, I found very interesting your last point about being able to accept the fact that others don't necessarily find themselves comfortable. I see that from my personal experience, although it's not necessarily easy, because yes, when you come to the point where you can recognize complexity as a feature of reality, sometimes you tend the interaction to say, why you cannot see that? I mean, it's there. But people feel comfortable in many situations into having simple explanations. And I think we need to accept that. But I also believe that, well, definitely the main value of a book like yours, I hopefully podcast like this one, is slowly make people aware that there are many things that are not simple out there, and it doesn't matter if you don't like it, still they are not simple and you need to learn the tools to face them. And I think it's a lot about providing tools. I see this sort of interaction, this conversation with you about providing everybody the best tools.
Yeah, you know, now I'm writing another book. Writing the first one, I realized that there was a lot still to be said, starting from the starting point, the definition, like we started this conversation, starting from the definition of complexity or from an example of it. And exactly like you say, in school, at work, the way that we learn things, the way that we are taught to do the work is all surrounded but by a lot of assumptions that come from the industrial age. Think about Newtonian classic physics. Looking at the initial condition, I could predict where a planet will be in the sky in 400 years. It's all cause and effect, and that's how we are used to reason. But we are not used to reason with the uncertainty. And then going back to your point of being comfortable, we as a human being, on one side, we have some characteristics that allow us to deal very well with complexity. Think about the ambiguity with the language, think about the complexity of social interaction, think about politics. But then there are other things, like you were mentioning, we strive for coherent narrative. We look for simple explanation. We feel deeply uncomfortable when we realize the impact of randomness around us. We find it hard when an important event in our life or at work is partially due to random reason, or just how a lot of different contributions come together in that moment. And so in our history, in our storytelling, in our myth, there is a hero, a leader, the person that finds the solution. And that's how it is easier for us to tell stories and to share knowledge. But that goes against on what works with complexity.
This part you mentioned is very, very crucial. And yes, and I think it really lies down into having a good understanding of our own thought process works as an individual and as groups of individuals, and that influences a lot the way we can process information and we can communicate with others. I was reading some time ago. I'm gonna put the link in the description of the podcast. An interesting article in the Guardian that was mentioning that. I mean, the main point was that the two core skills that schools should teach now. One is complexity thinking. Well, interestingly enough.
Wow.
And the other one is metacognition, which is really about being able to understand your own, recognize your own thoughts. And which, as you mentioned, this, for example, desire for a simple narrative. Sometimes we are in a situation, we find a simple narrative, we anchor onto it because that's what our brain wants. But it's not necessarily the best solution for my problem. And I think, so, and it was very interesting, these two tools were mentioned as the most important ones, the non-necessary tools that are taught at school at all. They're also very much interlinked together, as you just mentioned. Of course, this conversation with this specific topic you're having could last hours and hours, but let me try to move slightly sideways and still stay on your book and talk a bit about ways of kind of recognizing and classifying complexity, as you mentioned, because that can be very helpful. And well, not everything is complex on the other end, so it's also fair to say. And you actually want to be able to recognize that because there might be simpler or more straightforward way to approach things, and you don't want to get into sort of the rabbit hole unnecessarily. So that's a fair point. And personally, I always found very interesting the Cinefin framework as a tool, at least that's just my personal experience. So I would like to have your point of view on how much you can apply realistically a framework like the Cinefin one, or and also if you feel there might be better ways, or how this is evolving over time.
Cinefin is incredibly interesting and useful. I like how it presents different system dynamics and how to give us a language to start to talk and look at complexity as a group and collective activity. So, two things come in my mind. First, I will say to everyone, you know, sometimes we talk about complexity sciences, plural. So I will say to everyone, go out and look for a lot of different authors and models. Do that. Don't stick only to one. And yes, you can start with the Cinefin. That's great. So that's one thing that I will say. I love Dr. Alberts, Stuart Kaufman, Ralph Stacey, and many others. Then going back about the use of Cinefin, especially trying to understand the complexity of the problem that we have in front of us, something happened to me that I was kind of surprised. So there are some tools or techniques that to me are very intuitive in helping me reflect on how complex a problem is. Liz Kelg created an extremely nice scale of complexity that is basically built around the question on who have done this before, how new it is, how innovative, how unprecedented, and so how much we don't know about that at the time. Again, the example of COVID and how it changed when we had the vaccine. Strangely enough, having worked with a lot of different groups, I find it very effective to use the 4 points method built on Cinefin. So very quickly, I found myself working with program project managers and PMO, and I asked them to think about some of the project or program they worked in the past. And I asked them which one has been so simple to you that it was like switching on and off your smartphone, because you have done that before multiple times, you and the organization. Which one instead were more complicated? It was like when the GP referred you to a specialist, so you need some expert to deal with that, but once you got the right expert and you do the artwork, you will have succeeded in your project, program, or problem. And which one instead were kind of a surprise, constantly changing, pushing you to bend the rule, to try to do things in different way, to surprise you with the unexpected outcomes, and were kind of very challenging for you? And then think about which one instead were more like in a situation of emergency, when the firefighters come to your house or you have to run to any. And with this method, I asked them to try to position their past project inside this space. So this is a very quick and I'm sure is not a perfect at all description of the 4-point method. It's very quick. But doing this exercise collectively with the project, program, or PMO managers that had a shared experience of previous project, they allow them, they start to get them thinking about complexity. So the 4-point method with the Kinavin, even if it is an old method, had been extremely effective with a lot of people. That is my personal experience, at least.
I agree. That's also why I tend to start from something like that, because it can be very effective in as a first introduction to complexity with people that don't necessarily have faced that before. And thanks, by the way, correct me on the proper pronunciation, Canadian. And I know it's a Welsh word, Snowden, the author of the method and the methodologies around it is from Wales. Thanks. And I think it's very important, again, for people to look into specific implementations and methods to look into complexity. And I do believe Leaving Complexity is a very good book, because you have a lot of these methods. And in that sense, you can really come out with a set of tools. And we were talking just a few minutes ago about tools. Personally see Leaving Complexity really as a toolbox, as a book that every some time I can get back and open and then say, okay, what tool do I need now? And also toolbox that I've suggested others, because if you are interested in complexity, you can have a lot of practical applications in there. So let me move out now. We're going to go back to the book topic in a minute, but I would like to move out of the book specifically because I have been thinking a lot over time about a question that I think you might be a great person to answer. And the question is, what is the relationship between complexity and agile? Because I always saw agile as a great, let's call it, set of methods and practices and principles that can help you face complexity. But on the other end, it's not necessarily always the case. So I don't think necessarily there is a 100% overlap, but maybe I'm wrong on that. And secondarily, I also see sometimes agility used also to kind of go against some of the things we discussed so far and trying to oversimplify things when not necessarily that's the best approach. And then I wonder, is that agile, or actually the true principle of agile is are all about complexity, and that is a misapplication of agile when we actually go against that. So yeah, I know this question is not very clear, but it's actually coming out of the fact that I've been thinking a lot over time, and I didn't necessarily reach very strong conclusions about that. But I also know, talking now with a complexity and agile practitioner, I might get some clarity out of that.
Yeah, well, talking about simplification, the reason why I say I'm a practitioner is because I recognize my limit. What I say can be wrong in some part, but I see there is a value of practitioner to talk with each other. And sometimes through mistakes, we start our journey and we correct one mistakes and we learn something new. And going to your question, so my current understanding is that, no, let's start from the beginning. Around 2003, I attended the first Italian Agile Day, and Joseph Perling was giving a keynote, and he was introducing complexity as a way to explain why we need Agile and why Agile works. So he was the first person for me to make the connection between complexity and Agile. More recently, Jeff Shatterland mentioned that one of the foundation for Scrum was complex adaptive systems. Now, the way I see is that many of the Agile frameworks, Scrum and XP, help to move a problem from the complex space into the complicated or ordered space. So the way that the empirical approach, the iterative and the incremental approach of work, the way of working collectively, the way of pushing uncertainty and unknowns up in our backlog and start with what we don't know, that are tools that help us to absorb the complexity, solve some of the unknowns, and tend to move the problem from the complex into the ordered, the complicated space. Now, there are many interpretations of Agile. People extend the meaning of Agile beyond its initial definition that you mentioned, that umbrella terms around a set of methods, and other people instead stick to that. Let's say that when we do radical innovation, someone point out that we take a dip into the chaos. We take a momentary dip into the chaos to open up possibility before going back into the complex. So when we move from the boundary between complexity and order into the boundary between chaos and complexity, it is not clear if agile method have something to help there. So that depends on your interpretation of agile. How wide is your interpretation of agile? What about agility then? Well, there are scientific definition of agility. I go back to Dr. Alberts and others that defined in a scientific way agility and how to measure that. And agility is one of the things that help you tackle complexity. So one way to look at the agility is that agility is the theory, scientific theory, underlying and underpinning agile, and is one of the way to tackle complexity. But I see complexity science and the tools coming from complexity science much broader and beyond agility and agile.
I appreciate the question was not necessarily well formulated, and again, the reason being still my probably confusion or lack of clarity. I made some clear progress after listening to you. So thank you very much for that. Was really insightful and personally helpful as well. Let's go back, talking about agile and complexity together, but from a different perspective, because what I also found fascinating, and I've been involved in some of sort of the original iterations also, was the process on which you wrote the book itself, Leading Complexity, because you followed Lean publication method and you kind of built Agile book in a proper sense, since you followed an Agile methodology to do that. And again, I like that because it really links that to reality and to the practice of doing these sort of things. And so I'll be really curious to understand from you, how was the process of doing that? And how did you approach it? How have been so far your lesson learned?
Well, I follow a very personal process. Everyone's creative process is different, but I'm happy to tell you mine. As you observed, and you helped me, give me a lot of feedback on the first book, I published a multiple version of it. So my first step is started with the realization that I had something to say and I wanted to share it, and with the illusion of having everything clear in my mind and that will be fast and painless. That was the starting point. So wrong. Then I started to put all this network of ideas and connection in my brain into a linear medium. I started to write it down and to translate my understanding in words. After I started to do that, I realized that I had to fill some gap, something that was clear and clear enough in my mind and needed more exploration in order to be explained and communicated clearly to others. So that pushed me to do some research and to clarify my thinking. I researched those parts, and then I start to write the first version of the book. As I mentioned previously, after looking at this first version, I saw the practices and something emerged. I start to connect the points and I start to notice these three regions calling to me. And I divided the practices in three regions. And doing that, I made additional discovery and I further refined the book once again, adding, clarifying concept and adding concept. The feedback from readers was also important all through, making it clear what was what message was coming to them, what was clear, what was easy to understand and what not, what was wrong, what was right, what was missing. And then again, that was not the end yet. After I published the first 2-3 version, I start to go to some interview and to present the book. And so I start to take another step back and start to tell the book quickly from the outside. And that gives me another level of understanding. What is the main point? What are the few things? What are the key points that you want to tell the reader out of all these? And so those are all the different iteration and refinement my creative process went through. And the last version of the book is the result of going through all those.
Beautiful. I really like these practical application. I really like the fact you can release multiple versions of the book, kind of like a software. Then the book has a lot of similarity with the software. But historically, there is this thing of, oh, I have to publish it. And yeah, there are different editions that follow this flow, but it's not the same thing. And yeah, the way this has been implemented is, I find it very fascinating and very close to sort of to the core of all of our conversation. And I come back to the beginning of the point of being a practitioner, which I think you embody very well on thinking about something and then trying it out, which at least I can say personally, coming from a theoretical physics background, is a great asset. I find myself personally to force myself sometimes to say, okay, well, that's nice in theory, and I can get in love with whatever is in my mind, but actually, okay, then how do I do it? Put in practice. But this sort of drive and sort of bias to actually practice and implementation, I think, should be at the core of really becoming a practitioner in any discipline. So unfortunately, I would have a lot of other questions because there are so many topics that can go very deep. I also, you touched a lot of references, so I'm going to put this in the description for listeners if they want to find out more, and definitely going to put a reference to your book, and so they can go and dive down into the different methods you explain. But I think this conversation is kind of nicely getting to the end, to the final question that now I hope the podcast listeners are used to, and which I think can be very interesting, especially getting an answer from all the different guests we had so far. And it's so nice that they talk to each other, they reference to each other, but I also every time very different because every person is different. So what are the key characteristics of a leader who embraces complexity for you?
Let me mention some very quickly. In relation to complexity, for me is awareness of complexity, recognition of the ability to recognize complex problem and understanding what it takes to deal with. Then there is a personal stance when we meet the uncertainty, unknowns, ambiguity, and the limited controls that we face with complexity, is being and feeling at ease with it, is patience of not jumping to conclusion, and curiosity. Then there is the way we do things together, and that is about having a sense of collaboration and community, and then being prepared to the unexpected with the reactivity, our ability to react, and resilience. Then going to more personal things is being present and being your authentic self instead of being busy, putting people at the center for real, because people play an important role with when dealing with human complexity, making a widespread use of collaboration, deep collaboration and teamwork, transparency, autonomy and excellence, practicing transparency, giving autonomy and pursuing excellence.
Wow. Quite a lot, and I understand why we need all of those. And I think some of them are related to one of the things I mentioned earlier when I talked about that the Guardian articles and the fact of being aware. So the element of metacognition, so really being present, being able to understand your own thoughts, your own feeling, and trying to be at ease with that, versus, of course, all the other complexity. I actually find really interesting, can find a strong relationship between that newspaper article and the way you kind of opened that up. That was very focused on education, but you opened it up into these characteristics, which are something that we can, all of us, implement in our daily life, and that's really relevant for complexity or not. So I think that's really the best way to close these episodes, because I believe all these characteristics you share with us, they need some reflection, and I would suggest everybody, and I was starting myself while you were saying them, like, check, not really. This list of characteristics offers an opportunity for self-reflection and being really honest with ourselves and say, am I good at this or not? Something that we should do often to be able to understand what's our level of maturity, knowing that we're never going to be perfect and we don't have to be perfect, but it's more about this agility cycle you talk about of constantly being able to listen to feedbacks and improve. So it was great talking to you, Luca, and was great reading your book and was great listening to your insights that you shared with us today. So thank you very much, and I hope to have you soon again in the podcast.
Thank you very much, Christian.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Engines of Creation. I hope you enjoyed this deep dive into applied complexity thinking with Luca Midodel. I believe we made a good step to understand how to practically use it. If you want to learn more, be sure to follow Engines of Creation and leave us a rating and a review. And don't hesitate to share this episode on social media and with friends and colleagues who might be interested. If you have any questions, comments or feedback, feel free to reach out to engines of creation@masterdonato.co. I'll be glad to continue the conversation. Engines of Creations will be back soon with another episode. Arrivederci!